The next presenter is Fabian Schindler, presenting discovering huge raster files in the browser with GeoTIFF.js.
I thought you'd clap after the talk. At least I hope so. Okay, welcome and thank you for showing up so numerously. I'll just quickly introduce myself and my company. I work for EOX. EOX is a small company from Austria, and we're dealing with geospatial raster data mostly. Satellite data, but also other data. So it was just natural for us to somehow come up with the idea to make the GeoTIFF implementation in the browser. So, what is GeoTIFF.js? GeoTIFF.js is a pure JavaScript library dealing with GeoTIFF files. And it's naturally supported by all browsers, or mostly all browsers, and it's also supported by Node.js. So you can also use it for the server, but why would you? There's probably GDAL. I tried to put the ease of use, like the developer experience, in the center, and also the performance to make everything performance. Since version 1.0, also the asynchronous part of GeoTIFF.js has gone way to the center. So it's more important to have an async approach, because we are dealing with a lot of data. So synchronous approaches is not feasible anymore. Since the last version, which was 0.4, there has been basically a complete rewrite, because what Daniel just showed us in the last talk, the from array buffer, like you have to download the whole file and then have it in an array buffer and then use it, that's not feasible, because we have huge raster data sets now and we want to view them in a performant manner, or view them at all. All right. Daniel has laid great groundwork to show how GeoTIFF.js is actually used. I will demonstrate what is going on underneath. So what is between the cogs. So what is a TIFF file? Who knows what TIFF does stand for? Anyone? Wrong, it's actually standing for thousands different file formats. but that's, yeah, all right. It's a proven standard, so it's like ages old, like 20 years old, and it's well adopted. It was used for printing out files or something like that. So, and it's really great, because it's very extensible, and it provides a basis for various use cases, and you can put basically everything in it, as long as it's 2D raster data. So you can have satellite images, you can model outputs, you can RGB data if you're into that, and you can even put multiple images into one file. We call that overviews, because usually it's overviews, because it's like the same image but in a lower resolution for a faster display. All right, and you can also have metadata, for example geospatial metadata, which makes a TIFF GeoTIFF. Yeah, the benefits are self-describing. You have everything in one file. You have the metadata and the data. You can have multiple resolutions. You can have more than 8-bit RGB. And you can have arbitrary bands, channels, whatever you need. And you can have an arbitrary data type. So this was the basic idea why we actually decided to implement GeoTIFF in GeoTIFF.js. As Daniel mentioned, there's also cloud-optimized GeoTIFFs. We were really lucky to have a GeoTIFF.js library ready before this whole cock craze went on. So we just jumped on the train and had a good ride. It's basically a conventions for normal TIFF files to make them more easily consumable via the internet, via the network. The recommendations are I think you already heard that they are tiled, compressed, and have overviews, and they have a specific file structure, which I will be showing in a minute. Okay, so I already said that. Okay, so how does a TIFF or GeoTIFF look like? So first off, you have the header. The header says, well, it's the endianness if it's a big TIFF. I think there was a question. So TIFFs can only be 4 GB in size. If they are larger, they have to be big TIFF. So it's like a small change in the structure of the file. And then you have the pointer to the first IFD. IFD stands for image file descriptor, which basically describes one image in the TIFF. And in the end of that, you have the pointer to the next IFD and the pointer to the next IFD and so on. So you have basically a linked list of all the images within the TIFF. Okay, if you look at one IFD, how does it look like? You have basically the identifier, you have the type, and then you have the value. If the value does not fit in this 2 bytes here, you can see, for example, you have a 2 byte value here, you have 2 1-byte values, but if the value is bigger than 2 bytes, you have to make a reference to the actual value, which is used usually for this raster table. So basically locations in the file where the actual raster data is stored, which is usually larger, so it doesn't fit in the tag itself. So you have to make this reference. And you notice a pattern. So like these arrows, they're bad. They're really bad, especially for performance. This is what a well-behaved TIFF file looks like. So first you have the header, then right after it you have the IFD, and then right after that you have the IFD data, so the values that don't fit into the tags, and then you have the raster data. But it doesn't need to have look like that. So your TIFF file could be spread over the whole file, and there can be holes inside, but a well-behaved TIFF file looks like that. And an even more well-behaved TIFF file, which is a cork, looks like that. So again, you have the header, you have the pointer to the first IFD, then you have the first IFD data. So the first image is like the image in your full resolution, like the largest image, the biggest one, but the actual raster data for that lies in the end of the image. I talked about that in a moment, why that is. Then you have the next IFD is with the next largest resolution and so on. So the image size until here decreases, and then it increases again. So you have here the raster data for the lowest resolution, and then you have the raster data for the next lowest, and then until you get to the highest resolution in the end of the file. All right, so what are the challenges when reading a TIFF file? So as I've already said, TIFF is a very diverse format. You can have your raster data basically in strips of data, or you can have it in tiles. You can have multiple compression formats. You can have the planar configuration, it's called. Like if you have one big array with red, green, blue, or you have the red all in one array, and the green in one array, and the blue in one array. Then you can have, if you have an RGB TIFF, you can have it in diverse format of color representation. You can have multiple data types. You can have the overviews inside of the TIFF, or you can have it in a separate file, and so on. And I talked about the arrows. The arrows are bad. You can have many indirections. And you can have, as well, you can have huge files. So 100 megabytes, 1 gigabyte, 2 gigabytes. It's all possible with TIFF. And coming from the other side, you have challenges when you're accessing the data via the browser. You have bandwidth problems, you have a bandwidth limitation. In the browser especially, you have limited number of concurrent requests. And you also have the limit in memory, because browsers have no access to the file system. So you're limited to what you actually have in the RAM. Okay, so we have some concepts in TIFF. So the TIFF-related challenges are handled by the reader and the decoder. So reader and decoder are two concepts. And then you have the source. For the source, as Daniel already mentioned in the last talk, we can access parts of the file via HTTP range requests. As you can see, this is the HTTP header. So we send the HTTP header to and want this file, the file.tiff, and we only want the first 1024 bytes. So this is what we have to do. Okay, would that solve the problem? As you can see, if I just access the header, I send a request to just get the header of the file. Okay, great. Now I have the link to the first IFD, so we have the first indirection. Then I access the first IFD, and maybe I want to the not what don't want the first IFD. I want the next IFD, so I have an indirection again. And then I go to the tag and actually want to get the raster data. So I just need to find the value of the tag, and then I have the strip or tile table where the actual raster data is stored. So we have 1, 2, 3, 4, maybe more indirections. So if we send a request for each, that's just too much. So we need an additional layer of abstraction, which I'll come to in a minute. So how is the data transformed within GeoTIFF.js? So first off, we have raw bytes, like slices of the file, like as I've already shown you with the HTTP range requests. Then we want to get to tiles and rows, but they're too low level. We can't actually use them. They are all maybe compressed, maybe they are interleaved and we don't want that and so on. So we want the actual data arrays from that. So here are the layers of abstraction. Again, so the three concepts I show you. So it's the reader, the source, and the decoder, which I am going to talk about a little more in detail. So the reader is responsible for, so this is the main interface to actually interact with the GeoTIFF. You read from the file, so you specify what window I want to read, what data I'm actually interested in, and what size do I want it in, and what interpolation method is used, and whatever. Below that, it has to decide a lot of things. For example, what IFD I want to read from. So it automatically detects the IFD according to the resolution that you're giving in. It fetches the required bytes from the source, and then it decodes those. And if you are dealing with RGB data, it also transforms those to a uniform RGB representation. So subsetting can be specified either the samples or the bands I'm actually interested in. But I can also give an image window or a bounding box in the geospatial coordinates of the GeoTIFF. And if I want, I can also rescale it to a different size or at the size I'm interested in. Okay, for RGB transformation, we have TIFF provides various options. For example, it could just be one single band grayscale, it can be palleted, it can be CMYK, YCB, CR, or Scilab. Those are defined in the TIFF standard, but I think others exist as well. And we want to display it in the browser, so we have to convert those to uniform RGB. And GeoTIFF does that. Okay, the next layer of abstraction is the source. So the source is the actual component fetching the data from the server, from the file, or whatever. And it has a very simple interface. So it's an async function. And you give it basically an offset within the file and the length in bytes you want to fetch. So if you want to implement your own source for whatever use case, this is the interface you have to implement. There are various built-in sources. We have already seen the array buffer, so which basically is you have downloaded the whole file in the array buffer and you can use it straight away. There's various options for remote files like HTTP files. And there's also the file API, like in the browser, if you open a local file, so you can also open a local file. This is how an HTTP range request looks like, but I've already shown you that this is really impractical because TIFF is like jumping back and forth a lot, and you have to follow those pesky errors in the file. So we have an abstraction level, which is called the blocked source. The idea is that you split the whole file into virtual blocks and only fetch the blocks of a fixed size and don't jump around. So this also serves as a cache. So a once fetched block is cached within the source and it hasn't been transmitted again. Okay, how does it look like? So we have this GeoTIFF file. So first off, we want to fetch the header again. But the block size, as you can see, is way more than the header because the header is just so small and the typical block size, and it fits the header and it fits the IFD and also IFD data. Okay, so great. So we have just made one request, and we got the header, and we got the IFD. And to actually read the TIFF data, we need to read all the IFD data. So we made a second request, and we just made two requests, and basically have all we need to have a representation of the TIFF file. And if we want to read the raster data, we can just read the next blocks of that, and we have we saved a lot of requests. Yeah, already said, there are fewer requests. And the slices may already been cached because it intersects with another block that you have already requested. And it also makes the optimization that consecutive blocks are not sent individually, but consecutive blocks are requested as a large portion of the file, and it's fetched in one. Okay, the last part is the decoder. Decoder is basically the decoding the decompression of the image. So currently implemented is deflate, LZW, JPEG, PEGbits. It's also possible to have the decoder in a so-called decoder pool. So you have a pool of web workers, and so they're sharing the decoder pool, and so you're basically parallelizing the decoding of the image, because this is the most CPU intensive part of the work. All right, I can quickly show you some example of how you use GTFJS in the JavaScript. So we've seen already a little bit of that. So you can import it via ES6 modules. You have here you open a URL, and here you can open the image directly, and then you can access the metadata like the width, height, tile width, tile height, and the number of samples in that image. But you can also access the geospatial metadata. You can see here the async functions, like actually fetching bytes. It's you have to precede it with this await syntax, or if you're using promises, you can have this then. But once the metadata is read, you don't need to do that, because it's already passed. So you don't have to put the await beforehand. Okay, so just some ways of actually accessing raster data. For example, in the first example, we are passing in a bounding box. The bounding box has to be, in the image coordinates. But there's also other ways to do that. It's basically the README. So if you're interested, please read the README. I'm skipping the examples now. I'm going to applications actually using GTFJS. So this is an eye catcher. So this is basically the first application we built with GTFJS. The animation is done separately, so it's not within GTFJS, but it's colorized data from GTFJS. Cog Explorer was basically a proof of concept to actually display huge data sets, like in this case, Landsat. The Landsat images are basically composite of six files. So we have one file for the red and one file for the red overviews and so on. So for each color band, you have at least two files. Daniel is the implementer of GeoTIFF.io, as far as I know. So it's also a nice app to inspect the raster data and make some calculations, statistics, and so on. He also implemented this GRaster for layer for leaflets, was basically the last talk. Ivan is going to show you tomorrow, and he promised to blow our minds, so I'm curious about that. And just yesterday, I stumbled upon a talk, the Copernicus EMS Activations Viewer, so like the Copernicus for disaster help and so on. So they're also using GTFJS, so I was proud, and so I put it into the slides. And are there any more? I'm curious to know. There's a Birds of a Feathers at 8 o'clock, at 18. So 6 o'clock, sorry, yeah. Okay, so I have to cut this short. So GTFJS has grown to a community project, which I'm really proud of. It was never planned that way, but yeah. Any contributions are welcome, so please go ahead. And some next steps, but I think we can discuss them in the Birds of a Feather session. All right, thank you. Thank you. Any questions? Yeah. I think just repeat the question.
Yeah. Seeing it's making HTTP requests, how will that work with caching?
In the browser, they're not cached. Okay. So the question was of how does HTTP range requests interact with browser caching? And the answer is they're not browser cached. But if you're using a blocked source, there is a least recently used cache built in. So all the blocks that are not used and are followed the cache size are discarded, but the others are kept inside this cache. So the blocked source is basically the cache for that. Is this okay? Any other questions? Yeah, please.
You said literally, this is how a well-behaved UTF file looks like.
Yeah.
How do badly behaved UTF files look?
So the question is, how do badly behaved GOTF files look like? Do you have kids? No. So they have the toys lying around everywhere. So basically, that's the data, the tags, the IFDs are spread around widely. I haven't actually come across such a file because most of those are created by sensible software. But you cannot actually guarantee that that is the case. Yeah.
Just answer the CRUD optimization is a specification. If you don't follow the specification, it's a bad.
Yeah. Repeat that. So right. So now I can repeat it. So it's on the audio. So the cloud optimized GTIF is, as Vincent said, is a specification. So if you follow the specifications, you certify it. So you produce well behaved TIFFs. Yes, please.
As far as I'm concerned, the worst behaved GeoTIFF file is any file I am given, because those are all elevation rasters, and the elevation is stored as an IEEE floating point value, which is a very, very bad way of storing an elevation value.
Okay, so you said...
I would like to say that this is the worst feature of the very flexible GeoTIFF form. It allows people to store elevation, and everybody is doing it, as an IEEE floating point.
Okay, so the quote was that elevation data in GeoTIFFs is usually stored as float 32, so IEEE floating points, which is a bad way. And I'm really curious to know why. So please come to the Birds of a Feather session and just... Great. Thanks a lot. Okay, one last question, please. Yeah? No. So the question was if I've benchmarked it on the server. So my main focus was the client side. So yeah, thanks for your numerous attendance.